Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Danielle Radoichin. Welcome to the sixth of the My Big Idea podcasts for ASOS, recorded on location at London Fashion Week. In this episode, I'm talking to Penny Martin, editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman. I sat down with her between shows to ask her about her impressions of Fashion Week, how she's managed to make her magazine into such a success, and her tips for following a career in fashion journalism. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Danielle.
Thank you for joining us on the My Big Idea podcast.
It's my pleasure.
What have you been up to today?
Ooh, well, I'm just starting. I've got a couple of shows this afternoon. And then there's the Business of Fashion's 500 gala tonight. And they've always been very generous to us at our place. We're part of the 500, so I will be turning up with bells on.
Oh, amazing. You guest of honour. What happens when you're kind of one of the special guests at those things?
Well, actually, it's a couple of years since I've been. I was ill last year, but there's a kind of, you know, it's a bit of a kind of industry jamboree, and there's a step and repeat board, etc. But I certainly won't be on that. I'll go around the back of that.
So you don't have to give a speech or anything?
No, not at all. But you're in the magazine. It's actually a really delightful thing to be part of. Yeah. People can get sneery about awards, but they're always pleased when they get them, and probably a bit put out when they don't.
Where'd you put the award?
I don't think there's an actual gong.
All right.
You just get printed inside.
So you don't get that classic Lou doorstopper or whatever.
No,
then.
I may have one or two, but I'm not telling you where I keep those.
So Fashion Week so far, any highlights?
Yeah, Saturday was really good. I loved Simone Rocha. That was in Southwark Cathedral, which was incredible. It's London's oldest cathedral space, don't you know?
What was it about it that was so strong?
It just felt very accomplished. It's always beautifully, beautifully made. That's the thing. Time was, when I started in fashion 15 years ago, there was always, people would really praise London young designers for their ideas, neatly avoiding pointing out the fact that a lot of the clothes weren't particularly well made or didn't fit the models particularly well. And indeed, sometimes the models weren't really that great either. But it's changed days now. And Simone, of course, has the fantastic manufacturing facilities at her disposal that come with her kind of family legacy.
Yeah.
You know, her father John Rusher no longer shows at London Fashion Week, but of course, you know, it's in their blood and they really know the business, etc. So
she's featured in your magazine before, hasn't she? Do you know her personally?
Yes, I do. And in fact, our Gentlewoman Club's about to do an event with her, which we haven't announced yet.
Can you tell us about it? Yes, please.
We're going to do a poker night. In that interview, she spoke a lot about the fact that when she goes back to China to see her relatives, they're all mad gamblers, and that she has these wild gambling nights with her aunties, etc. So she's really good at poker. I always thought, that'd be really good for our Gentlewoman Club. Do you know what that is?
No, tell me all about it.
As well as running the magazine, obviously it's twice a year, so there's a big kind of gap. Not for me. Meanwhile, at Fashion Week and selling ads and all that other stuff that comes with being an editor. But we decided that there was so much desire from our readers to have some kind of contact with us in between. And we had this massive mailing list of people that wanted information about the magazine that we started doing events with our readers. So there's this club of actually now 28,000 people. So it's my job to come up with events. So things like you interview Simone Rocha and she mentions this and you think, that would actually be quite a good event for us, because they tend to take the character of things that tend to be male events. We like this kind of idea of women inveigling themselves
into masculine
environments.
So when you say male, like male...
A man, gentleman's club table, etc.
Yeah.
Of course women play poker, but you think of it as a much more masculine environment. So it's perfect context for a kind of girls' night. So she's going to be hosting that with us.
And anyone can come to these events?
Yeah, with that one, I think there's 40 places and people just apply for a place. And
that's via the website? Or?
Yeah, you can sign up for the event. They're all free. But we've done really nice things. We did a trip, a sort of day trip down to Somerset with Paul Smith. He came on the bus with us, went down to Durstlade Farm, which is the Houser & Wirt Art Gallery.
Amazing.
It was great, yeah, and he designed a picnic blanket for us, and we had an amazing...
I'm imagining like Beatles Magical Mystery Tour type.
It was exactly
bus, yeah.
like that. And God, he was brilliant. We did this Q&A, a bit like kind of bus tour guides. Felt like I was in Heidi High.
What's Paul Smith like on those kind of things?
Oh, exactly as you would hope he would be. Totally gregarious, sort of mannequin kind of, you know, physical farce. He's kind of like chaotic and full, very forthcoming. And we did an interview and he told all sorts of really kind of interesting stuff about himself. Yeah, I mean, he's 70, gets to say what he likes, and he is what he is. He showed a really beautiful collection last night. Yeah. Kind of very kind of relaxed and linen-y and kind of had really nice espadrilles with all the kind of Paul Smith ribbons, etc.
Yeah. I saw you really Instagrammed nice that picture.
Yeah, I just felt it was really relaxed. Sometimes you think of the tailoring, it's a bit strict and formal and a bit kind of work clothes for some people's palette. And there's actually a lot more to offer there. So obviously his trip down to Somerset's really loosened him up.
Good to know. So what are the big stories coming out of London Fashion Week this season? Because obviously, New York, there was a lot of buzz about the Kanye show and how all the models were fainting. There was a lot of talk about see now, buy now, off the runway.
Well, that was all touted in advance. That's not something
that's... It feels like it's been quite quiet here so far. Is that just me?
Well, that buy now, see now sort of story, I guess, is going to come to it's kind of a fulcrum tonight, where the Burberry show happens, and they've done something quite interesting. Well, it's, certainly for about a few months they've been asking editors to come in and do a secret advance viewing of thing that's
so
going to be revealed tonight.
Well,
actually, a flood prevented it at their space. But so it's
nature
interesting.
Yeah.
As much as it's a spontaneous buy now, see now, actually, there's some of the kind of old structures of fashion with the kind of lead time viewing process built in. So I don't know how different it really is from the old editorial system in a way. But what's very interesting for them, obviously, they've put so much store by all their digital activities for the past few years. And you think of Burberry being really kind of bound up with social media, etc., that they're returning to some of the things that we associated with them back in the day, 15 years ago, when it was all about kind of craft and British manufacturing, because they've teamed up with these people, the New Craftsmen, and they've built a place. Now, God, I'm going to forget the name. It's something like the House of Craft or something like that. And there's going to be some kind of experience in advance, which is all about British craftsmanship and one-off craft.
Yeah. It's quite nice. It's kind of a counterpoint to the madness of social media, yeah.
And also the kind of remoteness of digital. It's actually something that's haptic and physical and about texture and about, you know, having something in your hands, which I think has actually felt very distant from Burberry's brand values for the past few years. So maybe they're trying to bring the two back together again, having gone so wholeheartedly into something so digital.
That's interesting, actually. And I was going to ask you a bit about that in relationship to your magazine. So you are editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman, which is a biannual.
Yeah.
And how do you reconcile that with the pace of what happens on social media and trying to stay current? You've already mentioned your club.
I think you would say that our magazine's an antidote or a response to digital. I mean, I used to work at the digital pace. I was editor-in-chief of Show Studio from 2001 to 2008. And, you know, that my activity, my sort of creativity was to be totally responsive and initiating things that were happening all the time and with a kind of great deal of digital momentum. To then work on a print publication, especially one that's biannual, was to step away from that idea of creating on-demand content or like a kind of almost like a live program, like television programming, to make something so definitively periodical. It's only twice a year, and therefore it's not really about a conversation with your reader. It's about a really considered viewpoint for somebody that wants to consume something from a single perspective, which I think is really different. And I think that in a way the quality magazines are the ones that I think are quality have really peeled away from trying to keep lockstep with digital communication or indeed respond to it. I mean, I think the worst kind of magazines that are being made at the moment are the ones that are making journalism that sort of reads like digital online content. That the point is that the two should be completely separate, because they're a different kind of conversation. If you want to be online. You want to sit forward in your seat and you want to be typing away and sort of consuming and bringing things towards yourself. If you're reading a magazine, you're sitting back, aren't you, with your magazine well open, and you're reading somebody else's viewpoint. You're not really in the editorial conversation in the way that you are digital. And I think they're two completely different kind of experiences, and that's a really good thing.
It's really interesting. And now just going, sort of talking about your career, obviously you've done the digital thing and you've done the magazine thing, and I have some questions from our interns who are really keen to know a few things with regards to your career, such as...
God help them.
Did you know what you wanted to do when you were still at school?
I thought I did, yeah. I was going to university and I was going to do art history and I would work in a museum. Probably, or maybe as a curator, because that was the kind of job that seemed interesting at the time. And that's exactly what I did. I did a four-year degree, which is what you do in Scotland if you're lucky. I did an MA honours in art history, and then I went to Manchester. That was in Glasgow, and then I went to Manchester and did a museums diploma, which there were two that in at that time, which was, what, 94, 95? And then I went to work for Manchester University as a curator at the National Museum of Photography, Film and Television in Bradford, which was the Science Museum's photography collection. And I was there for a couple of years before I came down to London to do my PhD. So yeah, I was on a really academic trajectory, and I worked in the Women's Library, which is then called the Fawcett Library, the oldest collection of women's history in the world, where there was the biggest and most important collection of women's magazines, interestingly enough. And that actually wasn't my job, but I kind of would moonlight in the library at night and read all, because that's where Cynthia White, who wrote the first book, kind of academic book on women's magazines, is it called Women's World, something like that, and she'd based all her research on that collection. And I was at the V&A RCA's History of Design department doing my PhD when Nick Knight came to see me about possibly editing this website, and that was the big change. I mean, at that point I was kind of on my way to becoming an academic. I might have ended up as a curator, probably working on a collection of commercial photography or something like that. And it would have been...
Why do you think Nick was keen to work with someone who was from an academic background as opposed to a fashion background?
I don't know if he necessarily was consciously after that. Alice Rawsthorne had recently left the sort of start of Show Studio to become the director of the Design Museum. She had started commissioning text when Peter Saville and Nick Knight, the creative director Peter Saville and the photographer Nick Knight, had set up Show Studio, and it'd been going for about 6 months. And they had employed an arts editor who was going to do sort of editions and box sets and turn it into a kind of shop. And she had been at university with me, and they knew they needed somebody that kind of was curatorial but had a kind of literary background. And actually I think they knew they needed somebody to do inverted commas the text, but there really wasn't a comparable job description. It wasn't like there was as many sort of digital creation bodies as and editorial sort of outfits like there are now. And I think it was just a case of somebody that they knew, and it was a huge gamble for him, definitely, because I wasn't in any way qualified to do that, and then for me, because, you know, I had a job with, like, maternity leave and a contract. And he literally said to me, I can offer you 3 months' work till Christmas, and I don't know if it'll be going after that. But it just so happened that the circumstances in my own life at that time were so extreme, I was undergoing such a massive change in my personal life, etc., that I felt ready to sort of, you know, throw caution to the wind. But it was a crazy move, and as it turned out, an unbelievably advantageous one. But I mean, had no reassurance that it'd be any way different. I had the most bizarre job interview where Nick was shooting the Christian Dior campaigns, as he did then, for John Galliano, and I had to go to the set of a shoot that they were doing for the Design Museum, because it was pre-9/11, and there was a big show going to happen of John Galliano's work at Dior, and Nick was shooting one image per collection as this big kind of visual context for the exhibition to happen. And I think they were on like the fourth collection or something like that, and they needed a strong man, a snake charmer and something else, and it was me and them in the green room, and I was just like staring around. And I can remember I was dressed like I was kind of going to a job to become a temp in the city or something like that. I was wearing kind of my best trousers and my best shirt or something, and I was sitting next to these kind of wild guys. And this guy with pigtails came in and said, "Oh, are you Penny?" And I got introduced to him, and it, you know, and he was wearing a spandex sort of onesie with a scooped out front, a bit like Freddie Mercury. And then I looked back and I realised that was John Galliano. It was the most bizarre thing.
Wow.
He invited me into my interview, and then Nick Knight had no idea how to conduct a job interview. It was just, his first question was, "Are you married?" I was thinking, well, I don't think you know how to ask that
professional
in the HR department of the university I've just come from. So yeah, I mean, it makes absolutely no sense.
So that's
how
when
I
you
ended
fell in
up.
Love with the idea of working in fashion.
Well, I don't know. I think I just knew I wanted to work for Nick Knight. Mm. I think he's kind of got Jedi mind tricks and these really pale blue eyes. He could get you to do anything. Mm. That's how he gets all those photos out of those people.
Why did you want to go and work for a magazine after that then?
Well, that wasn't the initial jump. I worked there for about, at the library and at sort of show studio for about 7 years. And I think I'd kind of come to the end of kind of being able to work in that environment. And I started to think, oh, well, maybe I'll go off and do something, you know, do my own work. Mm. I was offered a job as the chair of fashion imagery and film back in academia at London College of Fashion, University Arts London. And I went off and became Professor Penny for a bit.
How did you find that?
I realised I couldn't actually go back. I didn't realise how much I'd changed as a result of being working in fashion, and I couldn't go back to that very solitary kind of creativity. And as greedy and as kind of desiring of sole authorship as I thought I was, I actually couldn't be without the kind of colleagues that I'd been working with. And having worked in a studio with kind of seven other people, like working flat out producing four projects a week, and that kind of momentum and creative sort of excitement, the pleasure such as it was of doing stuff on my own really slowly, because of course you're not as productive on your own without that kind of context, was really, I felt buried alive actually. So I'd sort of been a bit denatured, like an egg that had been boiled. I couldn't go back to being a sort of fluid egg white that was required to go back to academia. So I very quickly went back to Jop van Bennekom and Gert Jonkers, who had approached me whilst I was still at Show Studio to ask me if I wanted to edit a magazine, and that's what we did.
Mm. So I know that, again, the interns on my team will be wondering about the context. You said, you know, Nick Knight approached you and so on. What are your tips for, how important do you think it is to network, and what's a good way to go about it?
Well, I think before you network, you need something to offer. And there are many bright, switched on, informed, polite people in the job market to choose from. And, you know, you need something a bit different. You do need expertise. So I think that the reason that I continued to get employed, or certainly the reason I got employed in the first place, was I had something different from all the other people kind of walking in the door. And as bizarre as it was like 4 years in an archive and, you know, 10 years in the library, and just an absolutely fanatical knowledge rather than pure ambition and kind of willingness alone. So I think that you need something special and something different. You need to get to the library. You need to know the industry and not just what's on television and in magazines.
And you must have some good resource recommendations as well.
Yeah, I mean, your average public library is pretty well sourced, and I think,
what should you look for when you go into the library? What's a good place to start?
Oh, periodicals. Make sure you understand the history of the thing that you purport to be interested in. It's all very well subscribing to a few issues, but you need to understand the language that most creative directors and editors use, and that tends to be a kind of mental mood board of tear sheets. You need to know the history of magazines if that's the aspect of journalism you want to be in, whatever format it is. I mean, I don't care whether it's printed or it's radio or it's TV, you need to know the history of fashion media and have a viewpoint on it, and then know something outside it as well. I suppose my expertise was that I'd worked in the art world and I'd worked in museums. And, you know, I'm just curious about other people. It's amazing how many people are just interested in themselves in journalism. You know, you can generally tell them because the first word of every article start is the same. I.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be ambitious about the field and really opinionated about writing, etc., rather than just being willing to pick up the phone and answer the door, which is also important.
Well, It's really interesting, and I just wanted to say as well, I've never seen everyone around this table on my team looking so rapt at what someone's saying. So you've spoken so much, I've hardly had to interject at all.
Yeah, that's just it. They probably can't believe that I've managed to say so much without taking breath.
At the beginning, you were like, how are we going to fill 15 minutes? And I was thinking just now, oh my God, we've already run over.
Yeah, come to me if you want opinions.
No, it's been great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And what are you going on to do now?
I am off to Christopher Kane and then Joseph. And as I said, the business of Fashion 500 before flying off to Milan.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's been really, really lovely having you on.
Thank you for asking me.
That was Penny Martin talking to me at London Fashion Week. Don't forget to download previous episodes of My Big Idea for more advice on fashion careers. And you should also check out the ASOS Magazine fortnightly podcast, These Four Walls. I'm Danielle Radoichin. Thanks for listening. Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.